Jules Verne, arguably the father of modern science fiction, died 100 years ago this spring. Of course, he is best known for books like From the Earth to the Moon and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. The French writer published 54 novels mixing science and adventure during a remarkable 42-year career. You know, he had an uncanny knack for predicting the future. His books took readers from the outer limits of the universe to the deepest trenches of the oceans, places that we go now, often with keen insight into how science and technology would shape events in the coming century. Many explorers and scientists, even people like Neil Armstrong, spent their childhoods reading Verne's stories and were inspired to set off and explore the wonders of the world around them. Joining with me now to talk about Jules Verne's legacy is Brian Taves. He's a film specialist at the Library of Congress, but he's also a trustee of the North American Jules Verne Society and co-author of the Jules Verne Encyclopedia. He joins us by phone. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
Tell us about your society. What is the Jules Verne Society?
There are now organizations in quite a few countries, not only the United States, but the long one in France that's been around for many decades, in the Netherlands, in Poland, Germany, Croatia, of enthusiasts of Verne, and it's really been proliferating now with the web, allowing us to get to know each other much more and be closer, know each other's research. And we actually just met a couple of weeks ago, many of us, at the Jules Verne Centennial Conference held in Verne's town of Amiens, France.
Now, what is it about him that attracts all of you? It seems like he is almost a mythical figure.
Well, he's really an author for all ages and all times, because when he began writing, he was using the science of his own day, of what was available, to look at what might happen in the future, but also really just around the corner, and so that he was extrapolating from what was known to see what might be the social, the political impact on human society of changes in science. It was not just devices, but the larger context of how they would affect humanity.
Well, was he well-versed in science? A lot of his predictions have come true.
Very much so. He would spend every afternoon at the local library with all of the latest scientific journals, taking scrupulous notes, and when he felt he needed to have some material checked, he had a relative who was well-versed in mathematics and physics and would check any material with him.
1-800-989-8255. We're talking about Jules Verne this hour with Brian Taves. Who does he continue to pick up new enthusiasts, people who obviously were too young to know who he was, but who still find interest? Do you get kids and teenagers who are still reading him?
Very much so. He remains today for the longest period to be the most translated author in the world. Here he has been, as you mentioned, dead one century now, and yet his books still continue to be bestsellers. You can find them in even the smallest bookshops and train stations and airports, almost whatever country you're in. And that really testifies to his enduring appeal, and that it's an appeal that encompasses all types of readers, as young readers, but also older readers who see different things within the novels.
Yeah, I'm particularly talking, I'd like to talk about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, because submarines of that type were unknown 100 years. They were just in their infancy. Yet he could see these luxury submarines. So think about that. We're going to talk about that after we come back, take a short break. Stay with us, and we'll be right back talking to Brian Taves, film specialist at the Library of Congress, trustee of the North American Jules Verne Society, and co-author of the Jules Verne Encyclopedia. 1-800-989-8255 if you'd like to talk about Jules Verne. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about Jules Verne, who died about 100 years ago this spring. My guest is Brian Taves. He is trustee of the North American Jules Verne Society and co-author of the Jules Verne Encyclopedia. Brian, before the break, I mentioned about how prescient he was about 20,000 leagues under the sea and could foresee these very complex, huge, giant submarines.
And it's perhaps also his most incredible literary work. Not only was there the Nautilus, this submarine that was simultaneously a vehicle of luxury with an enormous library and museum enclosed within it, but also a vehicle for exploration as Captain Nemo visited the seas all around the world, even under the poles. But it was also a look at what the possible future perils for humanity and the seas would be, what the extent of wartime use of submarines as Captain Nemo uses his ships against his own national enemies, and look also at the impact on the ecosystems of the ocean, mankind's near wiping out of the whales. Verne was very prescient in seeing that there was a widespread impact on the seas, and to use the novel as a vehicle to explore that whole topic.
Mm-hmm. Now, he was sort of, in his science fiction, he didn't really go way out into realm of things we could never imagine. He sort of, submarines were being invented at the time of his death, and it was sort of something you could think about, but not, you know, kind of far out science fiction, was he?
No, he was very much, in a sense, what we might say, down to earth, which was a combination of two factors. He was writing under contract specifically to a publisher who wanted his stories originally to appear in a magazine oriented towards French family readers. And it was a magazine to serve an educative function, exploring geography, science to the mass reader. And also his publisher frankly discouraged him from any far afield notions of where science might go. For instance, we know now the novel published finally a few years ago, Paris in the 20th Century, had been rejected by his publisher, who claimed first that it was too far afield in the future, too depressing. No one would want to read or believe a novel about an urban area a century forth with such a dystopian view of what might occur.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones to West Boylston, Massachusetts. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Yeah, I heard that I read an article in, I don't know if it was Analog or Fantasy and Science Fiction magazine, but I heard Verne described as a scientific illiterate. Some of the things he described were known even in his time not to be very possible, or not to be possible. For instance, the firing of the cannon to send people to the moon would have most likely liquefied anybody who was inside the shell. And he seemed to have no conception of the effects of depth, the deep depth submersion on human beings.
Well, you could say that about Star Trek, the way they zip around the universe and with no regard to gravity or people's bodies and stuff like that. Let me get Brian to talk.
Well, part of the problem with what the reader's talking to, and it's actually a very famous article back in the early 1960s that was reading Verne and judging his science by the translator, not by the original Vernian text. And as distinguished New York University professor Walter James Miller, in a new translation of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea published a couple of years later, pointed out this isn't what Verne had written at all. In fact, his translators had very badly done the science, that he was being blamed for the bloopers, so to speak, of his translators, who had not only cut down on the science, cut down on the character, on the background of the story, often cutting as much as 25% of the entire novel.
No kidding.
And now we see, very fortunately, in recent years, that a whole series of new translations of Verne are appearing in the English language, which restore this text, do it properly, and often are supplied with very fascinating critical notes about the books, about the matters referred to, and the sometimes obscure references that might have to do with Verne's own time and need some familiarity with for modern readers. The particular story the caller referred to, From the Earth to the Moon, Verne was indeed knew that there were potential problems with his idea of sending a shell to the moon from a giant cannon, but rocketry was basically unknown at that time. He was concerned more with the idea of how it might be done, and then seeing how would this be handled within the national context. For instance, he sees, in a way that's very current for today, space travel being handled through private firms rather than specifically government agencies. Verne's first moonshot is a private venture of a post-Civil War gun club, who then take it upon themselves to ask the nation to contribute to their plan for a projectile to the moon, and it turns out to be a Frenchman who comes along and suggests, don't just send a projectile, but place people within it. Explore the moon.
Yeah. Was he the role model for modern science fiction writers at all?
He was. He's really, in a sense, they say the father, or maybe perhaps more properly, the grandfather of science fiction, because he was the first to consistently write a series of stories incorporating science within what we'd more at that time have called adventure narratives. But because, as you said, his science was often more grounded in reality, subsequent writers, even in his own time, began to experiment with the genre, taking it farther than he had. Even in the 1880s, 1890s, he already had hosts of imitators, and of course, really the whole genre has developed in the years since then. On the other hand, he did tackle a lot of subjects that some would be surprised that he did. For instance, shortly after H.G. Wells' novel about the Invisible Man came out, Verne wrote his own story of invisibility, The Secret of Wilhelm Storitz. And we recently published through the North American Jules Verne Society a play Verne wrote called Journey Through the Impossible, which tells of a journey to the center of the earth, to the depths of the seas in a submarine, and also to a planet in a distant galaxy, which goes well beyond what any of Verne's novels had ever thought of trying to suggest.
Was the play ever produced or staged?
Yes, and it was, in fact, a huge hit in the early 1880s. And then, very strangely, the manuscript had disappeared for nearly 100 years and was rediscovered in a Paris censorship office.
And so it's been now restaged.
It actually was just about a month ago, here at the Paris Embassy in Washington, D.C., and we're hoping that some others may take it up in an even more elaborate form. It was quite a spectacle when first produced.
Yeah.
In fact, for many of Verne's novels, such as Around the World in 80 Days, were as much a hit on the 19th century stage in many countries as it was a best-selling novel.
I don't think very many of us knew that. Yeah, it's very well. We're very well hidden. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us, Brian.
Glad to be with you.
Good luck to you. Brian Taves is a film specialist at the Library of Congress, also a trustee of the North American Jules Verne Society, and co-author of the Jules Verne Encyclopedia on the 100th anniversary of Jules Verne's death.